this is Katie and Amy, and we're back with another episode of As Crime Goes By.
Hi.
Hi. Today, we will be focusing on the topic of thrill killers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be covering BJ and Erica Siffrit, and...
I'm going to be doing Joanna Dennehy.
There we go.
Right. Let's get into this.
I'll start.
Please do.
Okay, so, Benjamin, also known as BJ, I know... I was like, I feel it's apt. And Erica Siffrit, we're the worst kind of couple, according to me. Wow, okay.
You would know.
I know. He was an ex-Navy SEAL and he had a reputation, he had a bad reputation due to his propensity for violence. And she was an ex-basketball star who obsessively would work on things over and over. She never did anything in moderation. This could be seen throughout her adolescent years, where she would practice basketball for hours on end each day.
Even did when you write basket on one piece?
Yeah. Basketball. Anyway, she'd practice it for hours on end each day, even when it became detrimental to other areas of her life. Erica's obsessive nature became particularly dangerous after she met BJ Siffrit. I'm going to be calling him that throughout the thing, so just get your giggles out.
No, I won't.
She soon became obsessed with him and his lifestyle, leading her down a darker path. It is said that when these two came together, it was apparent that they were natural-born killers.
Oh.
I know. A little shout-out to the movie franchise there.
You say this
there.
Is the worst couple ever. Sound like a match made in heaven.
Loved it. Lived for it. They were the type of people who did things purely to get a rush out of them, and that coupled with their joint lack of inhibitions was a toxic mix. Again, according to me, some of BJ's passions included Hitler, even had a swastika tattoo, guns, and snakes. He was really attracted to the more negative side of life. Before he had even met Erica, BJ had harbored a desire to commit murder, but it was really meeting Erica that sparked those fantasies into reality.
True love.
I know. Myra and Ian.
It is like Myra
BJ
and Ian.
Erica. So rather than being put off by his violent and dark personality, she was attracted to it and encouraged it.
Hmm.
I've just put, she was attracted to it and encouraged. For her birthday one year. She had even asked BJ to buy her a gun. And when he gave it to her, she would then obsessively practice with it. You're seeing a theme.
Mm-hmm.
And even just carry it on her. I don't know why I've put that in there. So when he got her a gun, she'd just carry it about her person.
Well, you know, it says something about the character, doesn't it?
Interesting fact.
I like a fun fact.
It is believed that, just as with everything else in her life, Erica had become obsessed with the weapon. Ah, there we go.
Oh, okay.
I shouldn't have judged myself so quickly. And the power it enabled her to have over people. It's a common belief amongst criminal profilers. It's a common belief amongst Candace DeLong.
Oh, another Deadly Women episode is this.
It is indeed.
Should have really, the second there's a woman in
So it's commonly believed amongst... No, it is a common belief amongst
Can
criminal profilers. No. Oh, right, okay, I'm sorry. This again.
Start that sentence again.
It is a common belief amongst criminal profilers that had the two never met, they probably wouldn't have gotten into too much trouble.
Can you say that again? Because I did like a fart with my glass.
No. But once the two of them got together, it was like gunpowder meeting a match, and the events that they carried out were then inevitable.
Did you make that simile?
No, M. William Phelps did.
Oh.
Okay. But now that I've credited him, he can't sue me. So, so these events... that began after they'd met and been gunpowder and a man.
Did the events begin?
The events began on Memorial Day weekend 2004 in Ocean City, Maryland.
Sounds lovely.
Don't ask me where that is, because apart from America, I haven't got a fucking clue.
Just makes me think of the cookies.
I know, same. That's what I was thinking when I was watching it, and I was like, I wish I had some fucking Maryland biscuits with me.
Oh, I could go for a pack, like. Anyway, the point.
Yeah. So this is a common place for couples to go on the public holiday, apparently, according to Americans. Might be, I don't know.
All Americans.
Yeah, all Americans say this. Candace DeLong says this. And it is believed that the Siffrits chose this destination for particularly that reason. It would be a good hunting ground.
Mm.
On their first night in Ocean City, Erica and BJ met an unsuspecting young couple in a bar and kept them drinking until after midnight. I know. Hardcore. I make it to midnight and I'm like, yeah, pretty fucking wild, baby. It's been a crazy night for me. Martha Crutchley and Joshua Ford were basically the exact opposite of the Siffrits in every way. They were hardworking, kind and trusting, and it was most likely their trusting nature that led them to accepting an invitation from the Siffrits to go up to their rented apartment at the end of the night and carry on drinking.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this was a bad turn for them.
Yeah, it doesn't get better for them after this point. Like, once in the apartment, BJ started off by talking about Hitler, which I could only imagine made Martha and Joshua extremely uncomfortable. That's just my personal opinion that I've written in there.
So if I mention Hitler at all, you're just going
to... Well, no, but he was like, oh, like, I think he had, like, awesome ideas. Like, I think he was, like, so clever. He wasn't just, like, historically. So in 1933... so... according to me, I can only imagine that this made Martha and Joshua extremely uncomfortable. And then... Erica began rampaging about. Jesus.
Is that the way I run setting the
scene? Yeah. I'm rampaging about. I feel like I could have used a better word there, but clearly I was tired at this point.
We're on story 1 of 4.
So, along with the rampaging, she started accusing the couple of stealing her bag. This was done by Erica to create an atmosphere of menacing and fear in order to prolong Martha and Joshua's suffering before they were murdered. Oh. Erica and BJ did this because they are sociopathic thrill seekers. Why am I so opinionated about this?
Like, you are very much.
Like... Everything in my notes, I'm just like, I don't even feel like this is fact. I feel like I've just said this.
All your stories, though, are like that. You're like... fucking dicks. Yeah. And I'm like, man, I try to stay impartial to some extent.
Oh, yeah, well, like you did with Eileen.
That was a one-off. Mary Bell.
Yeah, she's from Newcastle, I'm allowed.
You didn't see me standing up for fucking Myra and Ian.
Yeah, well, a bit different.
All murdered people, didn't they?
I suppose. Anyway.
That's the point.
So, yeah, so there were sociopathic thrill seekers. And so on top of wanting to draw out and make their victims' fear last longer, they also have no feelings of empathy about how awful this would be for the other party involved, or any remorse for the murder they are about to commit. I don't know why I started speaking in the present tense.
I know. Are you a voiceover?
I just want to be on Deadly Women, okay?
She's after your job, Candace.
If anything, it would be Lin-Ann Zegers, the girl who does the voiceover.
Why do you know so much?
And watch the I'm credits.
A casual fan of that show, whereas you were, like, groupie.
I introduced you to that show.
You did, thank you.
Upon Erica accusing Martha and Joshua, BJ ups the ante and produced his gun, waving it around in front of them, and he told them to take off their clothes, further increasing the discomfort, I imagine, for the couple.
I mean, props.
And for his and Erica's own personal gratification. After that, he then ordered them into the bathroom and they locked the door behind themselves in a vain attempt to stop the would-be killers. Erica and BJ then spend some time egging each other on and psyching each other up to commit the murder, and eventually BJ burst into the bathroom and shot Joshua. At the same time, Martha was curled up under the bathroom sink and had to witness Joshua's murder firsthand. Oof. I know. Pretty bloody grim, isn't it?
I think I'd always rather be murdered first.
I think I would be the same, because, like, you're still scared, but the fear of watching someone get murdered first and just knowing it's going to happen to you would be horrific.
Aye, just so much worse.
Yeah.
No.
So it was then Erica who stabbed Martha to death as she pled for her life. The couple then dismembered both of the bodies and, according to Erica's own testimony, BJ chopped off one of the victim's legs, cut it in half, and said to Erica, "Go heat up some water. I want to eat this."
Oh my god.
Yeah.
When was this?
2000 and... 4. 2004.
Oh, I was like 10.
Yeah, I was 10. depending on when it happened.
Aye, 10 or
9. I don't know when Memorial Day weekend is.
Oh, I would have been 9.
When is Memorial Day weekend?
I don't know, summerish. But I'm November, so I know it's before.
Well,
that.
Then I would have been 8, because I'm younger than you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have been 8.
It could have been after your birthday or a summer baby. Anyway.
Anyway. Yeah, probably. Yeah, it could have been. Yeah. It could have been 9. I've lost my place. Yeah, here I am.
Sorry.
The murder was first brought to the attention of the authorities the Tuesday after the murder when Martha's...
Wait, did they eat the leg?
Yeah, he did.
Oh.
I know. Gross.
I thought we were just leaving out it. He was just saying it.
No, no. Apparently she went and het up some water.
Het.
He ate it. It was an intense old time in the rented apartment on Ocean City Boulevard.
Boulevard, man.
Oh, I don't fucking know. Anyway.
Sauce.
So the murder had been first brought to the attention of the authorities when, on the following Tuesday, Martha didn't turn up for work, so her co-workers reported her missing. Unfortunately, by this point, the Siffrits had already disposed of their dismembered body parts in supermarket, trash disposers. Like, you know, the big bins outside supermarkets.
Industrial bins.
Yeah, bins. There you go. And then carried on with their lives as though nothing had happened. They were witnessed going out for drinks, playing mini golf, and going out for dinner. Erica even got herself a tattoo as a reminder of the murders.
Oh, what was it?
Yeah, it was... I think it's a cross, but she placed it in the exact same spot where she'd stabbed Martha Crutchley.
Oh.
Gross.
Oh.
But, you know, their freedom didn't last for too long, because they're fucking morons. The Siffrits were caught a few days later through their own stupidity. I'm not judgmental
at all. Say, you're so on the fence all the time.
I know. Through their own stupidity and need for another thrill. Oh. On the final day of their holiday, they'd attempted to rob the local Hooters bar, and a silent alarm tripped, which in turn triggered a police response, and they caught the Siffrits in the act. Not only did they catch them in the act, but upon searching the car, police found 3 guns, a knife with traces of human body parts on it, and the 2 IDs of the victims.
Oh.
Yeah, so later body part, like, obviously then they began a search for, like, dead 2 bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And later the body parts that belonged to Martha and Joshua were found on landfill sites.
Jesus. Imagine finding that.
I know. And BJ and Erica were taken to court and tried separately.
Good.
They were both found guilty. BJ was sentenced to 30 years in prison and Erica received a life sentence. Both of them are incarcerated to this day in spite of multiple failed attempts appeals.
Mm-hmm.
And they finalised a divorce in 2010. So, shock, it didn't last.
I mean, what's the point? What's even the point in divorcing? Like,
oh, no.
Is there in prison?
Oh, no. I mean, you're pretty already low barrel people. I don't feel like infidelity is the worst thing that you could do.
No, and it's like, I mean, what? Do you want the house?
Like, the state owns it. Not myself.
What's the point? Shit, I haven't heard of that one.
Oh. So, well, there you go. You are enlightened.
Mm. Right. Is it time for a little bit of Joanna Dennehy?
It is indeed. And I'm intrigued because I only know basically her name and that she killed a guy.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not like you.
Oh.
Amy usually knows every single detail of every single murder that ever happened. It makes me worry for my safety.
You're co-hosting this with me. You don't come out of this clean in a police investigation.
I think if any one of us is more likely to murder someone.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Blame the mental one. The discrimination in this podcast.
Just putting it out there now. Just in case. Right, so, Joanna Dennehy. I'm
just going to stroke the cat.
He's a very cute cat, isn't he?
He's so cute. And he's so soft. He's the softest cat ever.
No, you're softer than Kevin.
Yeah.
You're beautiful.
Anyway.
Yes. Hello, everybody. So, Joanna Dennehy, a.k.a. the Peterborough Ditch Murderer. She was born in 1982 in St. Albans, Hertfordshire. As a young teenager, she aspired to be a lawyer. And
wow, life went really off track for this girl.
I think I didn't write this down, but I'm pretty sure I read something like her parents, like, put all this money into it. She used to be such a good kid in school.
Jesus.
But somewhere along the way...
Hang on, we can't give opinions here. We can only give facts.
Oh, yeah.
Follow on from my solid fact-giving.
Yes. What a great lead you have led.
What great English skills you have.
Thank you. I got an A-star in GCSE.
So did I. It must have just been given out that year.
It's clearly gone downhill since we went to university. Anyway, somewhere along the way, she went a bit off the rails.
Mm.
She began to steal from shops and started drinking from a young age. And she was occasionally sent home from school for drinking.
I thought you were going to say she started drinking from the bottle. All right, that's, tiny temper,
that's really
down.
When it went downhill for her. That first whiskey in the bottle. Oof. So when Dennehy was 15... Start again.
Sorry.
No, that wasn't even you. That was just I can't read. And we're not even drunk yet. So.
This is actually the most sober podcast we've done.
I know. Well done us. We're also recording 4 episodes in a row.
So by the 4th one, we'll be fucking melted.
So Dennehy was 15 when she met John Traynor, age 21. He was walking his German Shepherd in the park when Dennehy introduced herself because she liked dogs.
All right, well, fair enough. Yeah, I love dogs. My dog's lovely. Aye. Someone came up to me and introduced themselves because of my dog. I would understand.
Well, I'm glad your fate didn't end up like this.
Oh, no, I'm so mad by the sounds of it. So, I'd rather be reading the podcast than be in it as a victim.
I will have a really special episode when one of them is murdered. Just the other one crying.
Just a candlelit vigil. Over a phone.
Alone.
Drunk.
Perfect.
And then we'll That's how I want to be remembered. Yeah. I don't want any of my friends to like remember me together. I just want them all sad and alone in different houses, drunk.
All with a candle, drunk, talking about your mother to a phone. So, the pair started dating, but because of their 6-year age gap, this was the final straw for Dennehy's parents, so they threw her out.
That was what made them throw her out. Now, the underage drinking and the stealing and the crime. Just a fella who's 6 years older than her.
I throw her into his arms, why don't you? Yeah, I'm just like, all right.
It's really counterproductive.
So John's family also disapproved of their relationship and refused to let Dennehy stay with them. As a result, the pair ended up sleeping rough for about a year. John was actually not too bad of an influence on Dennehy. I mean, he wasn't amazing. But
well, no, the homelessness would attest to that.
Compared to Dennehy, he's a little fucking angel. So he didn't drink. He had smoked weed for some years, but that was prior to meeting Dennehy, and he stopped. So, yeah. And he also claims, and I don't know if this is true, that he didn't actually sleep with Dennehy until she was 16 years old.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, when did they meet? A week before she turned 16? Who knows?
Yeah.
They moved around for a few years before settling in a council house in Cambridgeshire. Neither John nor Dennehy worked, so they were on benefits, and Dennehy's share of the benefits usually were put towards alcohol and drugs.
Oh, lovely.
Yep. Good.
Solid spend of money.
Aye, taxpayers' money, thank you, Dennehy. Not that I was paying taxes at that point, because I was, I don't know.
Fucking paying them now, though, so we could be outraged now.
So, despite never wanting children, Dennehy gave birth to her first daughter in 1999. She had always just wanted it to be her and John. So after their daughter was born, their relationship began to decline. A neighbour once witnessed Dennehy battering John with a cricket bat during an argument.
Jesus.
Yeah. She claimed that she would frequently see John with black... This is the neighbour.
Yeah.
She'd frequently see John with black eyes and covered in bruises. This same neighbour also claimed that Dennehy never bothered with her daughter, and that it was only ever John who took her to school and who picked her up again. Same neighbour. Very nosy.
What was she? The one woman neighbourhood watch?
Aye, I know, right? She also suspected that the couple were drug dealers because she would constantly see people coming and going from the house. And one day...
Selling drugs.
Yeah. Or selling, buying, either or. And one day a woman appeared to overdose as she collapsed at Dennehy's front gate and had a fit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Could have been epileptic, though. Very judgmental, nosy neighbour.
Fucking curtain-twitching bitch.
Never murdered someone like that. So, probably not that bad of a human being, actually.
We don't know. That might be your fucking Erica Seyfried. Or not, because they're from different countries.
Yeah.
So, once when Dennehy was drunk, she almost knocked her daughter down the stairs. around the same time...
How was this child still living with this woman? Like...
She's about to not be.
Okay.
Around the same time, she also cheated on John with a neighbour, presumably not the busybody.
That was why she was slagging her all this time. She was just so jealous.
I can't believe she's alone with him. After all of this, John took the daughter and left to stay with his mum. But in 2003, they got back together. In a bid to keep John, Dennehy reined in her drinking and drug taking, but following the birth of their second daughter, she went back to her old ways. She began cheating on John again, this time with a woman, and would frequently return home with hickeys.
Oh, I know. God's sake.
How, like, 15-year-old is that?
It doesn't even, like, fit. Yeah, that's, like, 14, 15.
Have you ever seen Joanna Dennehy, though?
Yeah, she's rank.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't, like, yeah, that, of course, that's...
Yeah.
She probably is like, give me a hickey.
Yeah. Like, one of them. Like, you know, people who actually enjoy it. Like,
oh, look at this.
And they're, like,
I
so
got.
Proud of their hickey, and I'm like... Why?
I can imagine
so
her, like, coming home to John and being like, oh, look at this.
I know, and I'm like, oh, this is literally burst blood vessels. Like, that's all it is.
It's just gross.
Someone sucked that hard on your neck.
Ugh.
That's not sexy.
It doesn't even feel nice. For it to get to the point that you're getting a hickey.
It is actually a bit painful. Like, I feel like that is just my blood vessels bursting, though.
No, it's not attractive.
No, that's gross.
Anyway, in 2009, John finally divorced Dennehy and took both of their daughters with him. In 2012, Dennehy was sent to prison for theft. Upon her release, she let a home from a company called Quick Lets, who specialised in finding homes for homeless and vulnerable individuals.
Vulnerable? Funny use of the word.
Most of them were people who have just come out of prison.
Yeah.
Dennehy told the letting agent, Kevin Lee, that she had been released from prison after serving 8 years for murdering her father, killed 2 people in a house fire, and ran 2 people over and killed them too.
Oh, you'd only get 8 years for that. Feel like Kevin probably took it with a pinch of salt.
You let her off, like, I would be like, okay.
I'm not housing you.
After meeting her friend Gary Stretch, who was 7'3" tall.
So he got the name Stretch by any chance?
No, that's legit his surname.
Oh my god.
How appropriate. He's probably had ancestors who were so tall, yeah. And that's how they collectively got
That's like me being called Amy, very pale.
That's like your fucking Native American name.
God, that's sad. It's like Jaguar Paul, Eagle Claw, very pale.
To be honest, I'd be like pretty similar. Kevin Lee thought that they would be ideal for helping him to deal with problematic tenants. Threatening them.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. She's a psychopath and he's a fucking giant.
Aye, so I'd pay my rent. Yeah. Kevin, for some reason, I put in there, fancied Dennehy.
Alright, okay, so I'm the only one who gives opinions here, am I?
Again, I say, have you seen her and then heard the lie she tells?
I know.
And how she treated her ex-husband, so yeah. So he would buy her gifts, he didn't charge her any rent, and he also once gave her the money to buy a car.
Nah, imagine he fucked her, though.
Don't know. Don't know, sorry. Can't comment.
She doesn't seem like someone who would have kept it in her pants for that.
Just
like.
Saying, wish someone fancied me so much that they'd let me off my rent. That is a big chunk of my wage saved. On the 29th of March, 2013... Kevin failed to return home, so his wife called the police.
His wife called the police, did she?
So that's another thing, right? He's buying cars. And he's a...
For another woman?
And I'm not being funny. She's not, like...
She is not hot shit. She's literally shit, like...
Aye. Yeah. Hot shit's pretty gross, though, to be fair.
I wouldn't know.
You can imagine, man.
Yeah.
The next day, Kevin's car was discovered burnt out. The following day, his body was discovered in a ditch. The Peterborough Ditch Murders.
I think we know where this is going. I think we might know who the suspect is.
So he was dressed in women's clothing and positioned in a humiliating manner. He had been stabbed in the chest 5 times and both of his lungs had been punctured, as had his heart. Through checking his phone and his contacts, police were able to determine that Dennehy and her phone had been in the same location as Kevin when his car was set on fire.
Not so much with the smarts, was she?
I mean, I was shocked. She's the one who came up with an 8-year prison sentence for about 6 months. Police went to her house, but Dennehy was no longer there. In the garden, there was a blood-stained mattress, although the blood did not match to Kevin's.
Mm.
Whilst on the run, Dennehy and her friend Gary Stretch were constantly stealing to get food and money just to keep going.
Mm.
At one point, they became low on money, So Dennehy and Stretch visited Mark Lloyd, a friend of a friend of Stretch's, to
It's a loose link.
to sell off their stolen items. I think he, like, knew
was a fence.
He'd also been in prison, but not for the murder of us. So they covered Mark's living room with their stolen items, and once there, Dennehy began to get excited. And whilst wielding... She's a mad cunt, okay?
What the fuck? This is the way you've described it. So they've just scattered around loads of stolen items, and she's just got so excited.
I was watching a documentary for this, and that's literally just how they put it. And this was Mark Lloyd describing it. They just came in, and there were loads of TVs in your living room. And she was wielding a knife. She said to Stretch that she had already killed 3 people, and now she wanted to kill some more.
You wouldn't have been feeling too secure at that point. Like, I can't lie.
But I have to say, Mark Lloyd was not feeling the most secure. So, Dennehy and Stretch got in the car and took Mark with them. I remember she was wielding a knife, so you can't be like, nah.
I'm good, thanks.
I'm all right. It sounds like you've just killed 3 people. So, Dennehy was drinking and getting more and more amped up as they were driving around. They drove from Hereford... they drove to Hereford, and en route, they stopped to buy cigarettes. Dennehy went into the shop and took Mark with her, threatening him with a knife the whole time. Once back in the car...
Imagine being the cashier for that. Like, you'd be like, what?
It was really... They show CCTV footage of it, and it's she's, like, puts her arms around him. She clearly has, like, her knife in her hand, but it just looks like the... She's cuddling. He's probably, like, the most uncomfortable
person. I would have pissed myself. There would have actually been a big trail of piss.
I'd have been, like... The look on my face would have been, like, fucking nuts. Get me out of here. So once they were back in the car, Dennehy started her hunt for her next victim. Gary pointed out the next victim, a retired fireman called Robin Barezza, who was walking home with his dog. I know.
I thought she was meant like dogs, a slag. Mm.
So, Dennehy got out of the car and stabbed Robin in the back twice. She then got back in the car, and 5 minutes later, Stretch pointed out another man, John Rogers, who was also walking his dog.
There's a theme here.
There is a theme here, isn't there, really? Dennehy again attacked...
As a dog owner, I'm feeling personally victimised by Joanna Dennehy.
Sorry, they're all men, so you'll see.
Well, as long as Stretch didn't like the look of me,
He probably thought, oh, she likes a dog. Go, go there. So, Dennehy again... got out the car and attacked him with her knife from behind. He, of course, fell down and she continued to stab him. Then she turned him over and repeatedly stabbed him in the front of his body. In total, he was stabbed over 30 times.
Jesus. Aye. What, no one noticed?
No. Oh, this was broad daylight in the street.
Jesus.
She did not get... This is a thrill killer, Amy.
Yeah.
So Dennehy took his dog and got back in the car. So not only do you stab him 30 times...
You also steal his dog.
So, both John Rogers and Robin Barezza managed to survive these attacks.
Oh, good.
Particularly shocked by John Rogers because he was stabbed so many times, and I hope to God he got his dog back.
Yeah.
Only a few minutes later, Dennehy, Stretch, and Mark were arrested by police because, again, they were in broad daylight in the street. So, people noticed and called the police, and, you know, and so at the same time looking for her anyway for a murder.
Yeah.
So, you know, they caught her pretty quick. So, well done, police. At the police station, Dennehy was calm and joking with officers, and she was even flirting with them. The day after her arrest, 2 more bodies were discovered in ditches. One body belonged to John Chapman, a housemate of Dennehy's. His DNA was matched to the blood found on the mattress at the house.
Mm-hmm.
He had been stabbed in the chest multiple times. The second body belonged to Lucas... Now, bear with me. Lucas Slobovesky.
Okay.
We're going to just call him Lucas.
Yeah.
He had been stabbed in the chest and the heart. Oh, and his heart had been punctured in the attack. It came to light that prior to her arrest, Dennehy had taken a 14-year-old girl to Lucas's body, which was at the time hidden in a wheelie bin.
Mm.
Imagine being that 14-year-old girl.
Oh.
So, in
that's
court...
That's a lot. Like, a lot.
Aye, that's traumatising for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Not coming back from that at all. So... In court, Dennehy pleaded guilty to the 3 murders and the 2 attempted murders. So at least there was no...
She's probably fucking proud of it.
Oh, definitely.
Probably like, there's actually loads more.
I would, like, say definitely, to be honest. She was sentenced to life in prison, and to this day, she is one of only 3 women to receive this sentence in the UK, along with Rose West and Myra Hindley.
Mm.
So that's Joanna Dennehy.
Covered 2 out of 3, baby.
Aye, she's, oh, yeah, I have. Oh, I'll have to take Rose West. Yeah, Rose West. I thought I'd got her in my mixed up there. So, yeah, that's Joanna Dennehy.
Yeah, sounds like a swell gal.
Aye. So, that's that. We've got a power through because we have...
Yeah, we have 3 more of these bad boys to record tonight.
Aye. But you're going to have them slightly spaced out.
Don't want to spoil you.
Right, we're going to space them out every 2 weeks because we're not seeing each other again after tonight till New Year's.
I know, how sad.
And it's currently the 1st of November, so we have a big long break and lots of episodes to record. If you want to keep up to date with what we're doing, go and follow us on Instagram. Our Instagram is
As Crime Goes By.
I really said my work's Instagram. I'm so glad you got in there. So yeah, go and follow As Crime Goes By on Instagram. We'll just post pictures of the murderers that we're going to cover and hopefully a little prompt for you to go and check out our podcast if you want to keep up with us. Also follow us, like us, and if you're on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, please.
Yeah.
Help us get some more listeners. Next time, Amy, what are we going to be covering?
We will be covering A Sign of the Times.
And who are you going to be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, God, guys. Settle in.
So strap yourselves in, because this is a saga.
Ample notes on Casey. And I'm going to be doing Eugene or Eugenia Fellini. Fellini, yeah.
Fellini, yeah.
The entire time I was writing about her, I wanted to call her Felony, because it kind of looks like that.
Yeah, it does.
So if I call her Felony in that episode, sorry. All right, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.